Sego Sego Guego, Mandy Yendritz, Ya Dewaga Dirty Underdid, Sini Waxanoda, Nakohome Neha, Denogin Yoda, Onandawaga Hoden Shoni. I go by Amanda, and I belong to the Turtle Clan of the Onondaga Nation of the Haudenosaunee Confederacy, which people might not know as like it's the Seneca Iroquois, but we don't use those words to describe ourselves. Onondaga means people of the Great Hill, and Haudenosaunee building the longhouse. And today, I just also want to acknowledge that we are on occupied Gunnegahaga territory, which is the Mohawk Nation, the keepers of the Eastern Door, in what we call Jojage. And so I just want to say Nyawagoa, thank you very much to Gabrielle and Christina for your words that came before me. I do this, that's way more comfortable. So I guess today we're talking about self-determination, and the final points that you were talking about there around like legislation and rights-based frameworks, I fully agree with, you know, from an anti-colonial perspective. So like I just want to talk a little bit, start a little bit about how we cannot be self-determining if we are operating within rights-only frameworks because of the falsehood of liberation that is provided by rights, by the structure of rights. Because rights are something that is legislated and that are given and taken by the state. And in my context, it's an illegally occupying settler colonial nation state whose goal is to try to exterminate and assimilate indigenous peoples across Turtle Island. And so their goals are very different than mine. and so part of this, you know, these struggles for self-determination are tied because when our identities, when our beings are being defined and given parameters that are not up to ourselves, but up to those who have systemic power, then we are being occupied. You know, our bodies, you know, whether it's under cis sexism, you know, or settler colonialism, when those with power over you tell you what is the criteria for your existence, you know, whether it's if you can have your sex reflect your actual identity on your identification, or if it's an Indian number that they use to track you and track your heritage and your identity, and also to define who is or who is not indigenous or who is not trans, you know, these things. And so there's an inherent intersection there around self-determination, because what we are up against is structural power imbalances. And so those who have the power, and through the way that the power has been acquired is through an attack on self-determination. And so, for instance, the reason that you're all sitting here in this Eurocentric, you know, institution that we know as a university, people talk about the university as the ivory tower, and that is because it is literally a pillar of white supremacy. It has everything to do with erasing indigenous ways of knowing and being, and it is built on stolen land with resources that were acquired not only through stolen land, but through stolen bodies. And so, you know, sitting here in this space, you know, this is part of the struggle of self-determination, is even knowing, trying to remember and wake up to the reality that is here. And so all of that compilation of power, those who have this structural power, it has been acquired through the attack of self-determination. And so what I wanted to talk about before the university, the reason it exists is because of this notion that we call terra nullis. That's what Columbus said. Is terra nullis means an empty earth. And that when the conquistadors and those who came to colonize Turtle Island and many other parts of the world, when they arrived, they saw how indigenous people were living, and they decided that it didn't fit their standards of Eurocentric ideology of progress, and they decided that there was nothing here, and so they started to build and take. And that is why we're in a university, is because of the notion of terra nullis, which directly undermines indigenous self-determination. Because self-determination, I also want to explain on this a little bit more, because what I'm most interested in as an Ongwe Hongwe, as an indigenous woman, is collective self-determination and what we call nationhood. Because we are like, I noticed that the settler culture puts a lot of emphasis on individualism and like sort of this rug, and I fear that self-determination for perhaps in an anarchist context or maybe even an anti-capitalist context could leave space for rugged individualism, which could result and often does in directly and in actually impacting others' ability to self-determine, which is why we need to think about collective self-determination. And so for me, I want to actually use an example from an Indigenous perspective to try to explain some of these concepts, because colonialism brainwashes us all, whether we're Indigenous or not. And so I'm going to use an historical example between the Haudenosaunee and the Anishinaabe. It's not a very good drawing, but to try to explain some of this stuff. Because as I was talking about, self-determination is a collective process for me, because we need to be able to have the ability to collectively self-determine, which means that we should not have overarching systems of power that leave us with an imbalance. So this is, some people might recognize this, but probably very few people recognize this. This is the Dish With One Spoon wampum. And so people probably don't know what a wampum is. a wampum is a nation-to-nation agreement. So it's how we like ratified our political relations before white paper. So this is actually made of beads. It's a belt that's woven together. And this blue should actually be purple, but you know, do what I can here. And I don't have my necklace. But so it's a shell that you that we carve into beads, and then we weave them together. And so the reason it's called Dish With One Spoon is because the idea is that this here is to represent a dish, and this part is to represent a spoon. And the Anishinaabe, they refer to this agreement in the word for this agreement in their language means dish. And my Anishinaabe Moan isn't very good, so I'm not going to butcher it. But so within the Anishinaabe political context, this agreement is spoken about as the dish, as the one dish. And the one dish agreement is meant to remind the Anishinaabe that we have, as Oklahoan Anishinaabe people, we have this shared agreement to caretake Mother Earth, that we have, there's this dish that we all eat from as part of people who are in the same ecosystem. So, because there's a lot of shared territory between the Haudenosaunee and the Anishinaabe. In particular, I'm thinking about Lake Ontario, and that's actually the origin. A lot of people consider the dish to be Lake Ontario, but it can also be used as a larger example for like different shared ecosystems. And so the idea is that the dish needs to make all the rounds in the circle so that way everyone gets to eat. And we understand that it's not just only human nations, but also non-human nations that take from the dish. So we need to be aware of the fact that there are other nations, non-human nations, who are working, who have their own self-determination, who are working towards their own ability to survive and sustain themselves into the future. And so that way our interaction with the dish, with that which sustains us, should not impede their ability to do so. Again, so collective self-determination allows for for community and individual autonomy, but in such a way that does not undermine the ability for others to do the same. And so the reason that us Haudenosaunee call it the spoon, and our word for this is the Sewedogosera. And the reason that we call it the spoon is because not only do we have to share from the same dish, but the Anishinaabe, they are our brothers and sisters. They are some of our oldest friends. And we want to also share what we procure with them, what we have gathered, and what we have stored. And so this means that if there is some kind of issue with wild rice or hunting season, things like this, that the Anishinaabe Nation can come to the Haudenosaunee and knock on our door and ask to eat from that spoon. And that if there's something going wrong with our Junhekwa, with our life sustainers, the three sisters, corn, beans, and squash, that we can knock on their door and ask the same and we'll be fed. And so the idea is not only self-determination and like autonomy, but mutual aid and respect. And these are some of the fundamental principles that align us in our political struggles. And so I really like this example because it shows not only our ability to self-determine, but our respect for each other's autonomy. Because this shared concept, this shared agreement, has a different word and a different representation in each nation's language. We don't even use a shared word for it. That's why in English it's a combination of the two. Part of this sort of question around self-determination for me as well is, you know, earlier there was like a conversation around equality, you know, and back to the systemic power situation. In order for there to be equality, everyone would have to have the same, start off on the same page. But when we have a dominant culture, a settler death culture, that's built on white supremacy, cis supremacy, heteronormativity, you know, male supremacy, ableism, classism, all of these things, then there is no such thing as equality. Equality cannot exist under these structural conditions. And so, for myself as an Indigenous woman, part of self-determination is also, and collective self-determination, is to humble ourselves under natural law. And when I say natural law, I don't mean like a biologically essentializing eugenic understanding of natural law. Nothing nearly that white. What by natural law, what I mean is that in the winter it should snow, that the rivers should flow, that the sun will rise, that Grandmother Moon will shine down upon us in her full cycle, and that the rain, like that rain should fall, it should be clean, we should be able to drink the water and eat the moose, you know, these things that seem like natural things, like in that sense of natural law. And so that we need to humble ourselves to that. So, I mean, so my context for self-determination exists completely outside of like a Eurocentric imagining of autonomy or what does it mean to be self-determining, because it requires a relationship framework under which I am humbled by Mother Earth and the natural cycles of things. And so in order for myself as a Haudenosaunee woman to move forward in rebuilding our nationhood, because that's a big conversation that's happening a lot right now in EG circles, is nationhood and how do we rebuild that? And part of self-determination also is being able to have your own terms of engagement, right? So again, you're not experiencing the imposition of external force and you set your own terms. And so for me in the question of collective self-determination towards Indigenous sovereignty and nationhood, I really strongly believe that we have to have a collective healing process. And in order to do that, we need to allow a lot of space for different feelings, you know, because the intergenerational impact of contact is not a good one. Our communities, and especially, you know, I mean, all identities are intersecting, you know, so it's not just like, you know, there's Indigenous folks that come from all kinds of different backgrounds and occupy so many different bodies. But collectively, the impact of contact has resulted in some really messed up shit, you know, some really messed up shit. The loss of language, the displacement of our land, these two pieces in like specifically have resulted in disconnection from cultural identity, which means that we've forgotten who we are. And if we have forgotten who we are, then we cannot take up our responsibilities as Ongwehome people, because Ongwehome means human being. Anishinaabe means human being. Most Indigenous peoples across Turtle Island, all the way to Awayo, that I know anyway, they talk about themselves as human beings. Their word for themselves means that we're human beings. And as a result of being a human being, there are certain responsibilities that we hold, which usually means the affirmation of life. Like, whoa, what a goal, huh? But unfortunately, colonial capitalism is directly against that goal, because colonial capitalism looks at Mother Earth as terra nullis, you know, as for conquest, and says that, this was so distracting, by the way, I'm sorry. It's not you, it's just panels. But, because of the way that the death culture prioritizes consumption, and our value system is based on an economic, as a monetary, as a dollar and cents, you know, it's impossible to remember what it means to be human within a capitalist structure. And it's part of the reason that there is structural imbalances, because we're suffering from a collective spiritual loss. When we have, instead of working towards the affirmation of life, we have invested in a culture of death. And so, in order to reach true self-determination, and I think that's for anybody, for the notion of liberation to be true, we need to absolutely dismantle the systems of oppression and the power imbalances that exist in order to take away autonomy and take away self-determination and undermine the very conditions under which we can do those things for ourselves. And so, for me, the heart of it, of course, is going to be colonialism. And, you know, from the colonization of our gender relationships to our understanding of gender itself, to our relationship with the natural world, colonization has been very successful in creating circumstances where self-determination is impossible. And I think we need to work within our own communities, whether that be like, whatever a community looks like to you, because I'm not sure I believe in community. But I think that we need to like look within our own communities about how we can start to do that. Because I think that it's very important. It's hard because I feel like, I don't know, now I'm going to get really cynical, but I only have 2 minutes left or something like that. But I feel like self-determination is something that like cannot just be like achieved overnight, you know? And it's something that might require like a lot of serious, like it will require a lot of serious change, but I'm not sure. I don't feel so optimistic, because I think that between the tar sands and Fukushima, it's pretty much over. So, said it, you know. But so I don't know. I think it's like, okay, so maybe to bring it back to something we can work on is the personal is political, and the micro and macrocosm, and how are we individually working towards supporting others' liberation, you know? Because if we can work towards collective liberation, and like for me, from an anti-colonial perspective, that means like supporting indigenous self-determination, which means, and honestly, like land rights claims, things like that, that go through a settler colonial avenue, they can be strategically valuable, but ultimately only reify those structures of power that serve to undermine us. And so it's when people are taking direct action and taking action outside of the state and taking action that in fact threatens the state and threatens the long-term viability of the state, that threatens the economic stability of the state and questions its entire power structure. Those are the actions that we need to be supporting ultimately. You know, I mean, obviously there's like, you know, you can't have like, I'm not going to, obviously like, you're sorry about like going through a legal avenue that was legit. You know, I'm not casting judgment on other people, but in terms of an indigenous, you know, it's just, we have to, there are strategic moments, you know, to try to create on the ground changes in people's lives when we're impacted by, like, by colonial, racist, eugenic, you know, really fucked up policies that are designed to exterminate our identities and determine who we are outside of our own consent. You know, those things need to be fought, but what we need to really try to strive for ultimately is something that goes beyond those structures and creates a space for like ultimately what we would call is like mutual aid and respect. And if we can do that, then maybe we'll remember what it means to be human again, And like perhaps Mother Earth will take some mercy upon us, and us as a species will be able to move forward.